accession number 18265, reel 3.
Dave Brooks, reel 3. You were just saying about the attitude of these GIs.
They were being brash and cocky until the Germans decided to put down their few shells into the area. You never saw anything move so quick. They were down off the edges of the wadi and they were digging within seconds. I thought, well, at least you've now twigged on what war's all about. That if you want to keep your lives, you look after yourselves. Anyway, we fondly thought that we were going for a rest from the Burrada Valley, because we'd been some time in the field. We were certainly due a rest. But no, something else had broken out further up the road at a place called Sejanain in the Tamara Valley. And we were, the whole brigade were put into this area. As far as I know, the only other troops that were there was a battalion of the Sherwood Foresters, a company of commandos, a few French Foreign Legion, and that's about it. Well, a battle was to start there that was probably crucial to the whole operation in North Africa, in Tunisia. The Germans now had got a good many of their crack troops, and they did have very good troops in the Africa Corps, and they were making a determined attempt to smash through. And again, I couldn't twig on what it was all about at the time, but I did when I went back, and I thought, God, I know what it's about now. What they were after was the port of Tabaka, which was the village of Sejanain, was on the side of the main road leading to it. We were occupying the hills. It was part of the Atlas Mountains, but not all the hills in the Atlas are rocky. And we occupied a hill which we always call the Cork Wood, mainly because it was fertile hill, and on the top of it was quite a big area, a big forest of cork oak trees. But as I say, the Germans had marshalled up some very, very good troops. I know one of them was the Witzig's parachute Royal Engineers. There was a Panzer unit, and they were really good troops, and they really, really came at us. And in no time at all, Cork Wood was it was a carnage there, really. We were being supplied by a mule, and a lot of these were getting killed by the shelling, and it didn't take long for them to start to smell. We were losing men quite quickly, killed and wounded. In the end, the 1st Brigade had to withdraw from the Cork Wood. It withdrew about 2 or 3 miles down the road to another prominence, which we called the Pimples, which was 3 hills which looked like pimples. And to effect this, you had to the river was now in flood. not as deep as the Thames, but it was deep enough. And to affect this withdrawal, you had to go down through the river, if you like, along the river bank, which was not a nice journey. We regrouped, and a couple of days later, retook the area of Cork Wood. But during the course of the battle, I got wounded.
How did that happen?
It was aircraft. Messerschmitt. It made all four or five passes. It killed Bill Bacon, who was the chap I was talking about just now. Killed Mick Miles. It wounded. This is my section. This is. It killed. It wounded Ron Moon and myself. Ron was another one who came with me on this. It made terrific noise aircraft makes when it comes low and fires at you. I was hit on the first pass, but it made three or four more passes, but they weren't near me. Fred Martin come galloping up and he chucked me over his shoulder and took me to our medical officer. I think of his name now. Scotsman.
Don't worry about it.
No, plonked me down in the hollow in which he was working, and he was overworked. He'd got... There was... dozen or more people in this hollow. Some were very, very bad. I remember one poor fellow was, I think both his lower legs were gone. There was very little left. And he was just making little moaning noises. And the doc said to me, well, give us your morphia, because we carry little files of morphia. So I thought, oh, that's good. I was hit through the thigh, in and out the other side, right through. And it was painful, very painful, I thought. So I thought, oh, he's going to give me a dose of morphia. And I said to him, Gordon, his name was, Flash Gordon, aren't you going to... give me that. You don't bloody need it, laddie, he said. You don't need it. You're not bad enough. I need it. So he said, Fred Martin had come up and he'd throw me over his shoulder, and because my head was hanging down, my head started to swim, and I had to bang his backside for him to put me down, and I knew then that I could stand. I had thought that something was wrong with my back, but I found I could stand. And Doc Gordon just took a look at me and he said, right, take yourself and Ron Moon, who'd been hit in the ankle, and this German down the hill to regimental headquarters. So I said, I can't get down there, because it was quite a steep hill, albeit grassy. And he said, you bloody well can, he said, because nobody else is going to take you down there. You get yourself down there, he said. Well, I remember that by now they'd brought up along the road, headquarters was on the road, they'd brought up something like 300 field guns. And they were really having a go at the Germans. And the funny thing is, it's hard to walk under your own guns. It's not easy. And all the way down, as they opened up, we were ducking and diving and cursing ourselves. Why? We knew it was our own guns. You could see them. You could see them firing. You knew it was your own. They weren't aiming at you. The German, I forget where he was injured, but I found out then that the Germans as a race can make more fuss than the English do when they're hurt. They don't like being hurt much. They're more noisy than the British are. Anyway, down to the road, and quite quickly taken to a field hospital, which was just tents somewhere away from the fighting. Nothing, apart from a couple of injections, nothing was done to me there, because there was people far worse than me. And then from there, I went to a hospital, I think at Phillipville, which was again tents, all male personnel. And while I was there, again, nothing happened to me except I was in a bed and they were looking at me. Until one morning, I said to the medical orderly, "I don't know, I stink here." And he took one look and said, "Oh, Christ, right." Within a few minutes, I was in the operating tent, which was a smaller tent, just a trestle table, wooden trestle table. I'd got gas gangrene set in. Well, they cleaned me up, they put me to sleep, they cleaned me up, and I started having injections in the other cheek of my backside, which was bloody painful, really. From there, I went to another hospital at probably Bone, which is on the coast. That was operated by men and women. It's the first time we'd come onto women nurses. Some of them were off the Strathallan. Some of the nurses were. After perhaps a week there, put on a train, went all the way back to Algiers to a base hospital there on the hill outside Algiers, 97th Hospital, I think it was called. Again, there were Strathallan nurses there who were very friendly towards us. There's one of them, that was the first hospital I got to where you wore hospital blues and the red tie. And it was a building, but they'd had to put up marquees as well with double flies. And she said, "If you want to get out of here," one of the nurses said to me, "you'll put your uniform up in the roof of the tent," which you could do. "Otherwise, they won't let you out of here with blues on." So I said, "Right, thanks, I'll do that." It came useful a bit later, because you could hop the wag, and when I wasn't too bad by now, you could pop down to Algiers and see a bit of life. After a spell in that hospital, was sent to a convalescent camp outside Algiers, down towards Oran. I think it was called Fort... Not Deleuze. Well, it doesn't matter. We were housed in woods, in tents, smaller tents, and there was doctors there, there were PT wallahs there, and there was a beautiful beach. We were quite near a beach where we used to spend most of the day. And I found that I wasn't really healing up all that well until I went into the sea. As soon as I went into the sea, both the wounds started to heal. But I remember a very kind medical officer there, Major Murray, another Scot, who I felt I was ready to go back to my unit weeks before he sent me, but he'd say, no, laddie, you've done your bit, let somebody else do a bit, have another week. You see him once a week. But eventually, I made the journey back to the 2nd Battalion. He did me a favour, really, because of that, I missed Sicily, which was another action that we got into that, lives were lost. But I got back more or less when the battalion got back to Sousse, the Sousse area. There we lived in, after Sicily, we lived in the olive groves outside Sousse. Used to go to the coast almost daily, which is now a resort, Monastir. It was a pretty little Arab village at that time. We did have 3 days leave in Tunis, I think. But life wasn't too bad there at all, you know, and we waited for the next lot. Eventually, that was Italy, where we were taken to Bizerta and we boarded. I can't remember whether it was the Princess Pat or the Princess Emma. They were both of them were commando boats, which had been used on commando raids, but they were fast boats, which could let down landing craft for the commandos to come off. And that was our transport to Taranto in Italy. We went unescorted. I think all the 2nd Battalion were aboard the Pat or the Emma, and there was other boats, but all of them were fast, so therefore we had no real escort. And I thought, I don't like this at all. But then a sailor said to me, "No need to worry. The U-boats can't lay on us. We're too quick for them. They need a certain time to lay a torpedo onto you." We entered the outer harbour at Taranto, and then the boats went down, and in we got to make the landing. Just before we landed, the one of the battalions, which was the 6th Welsh Battalion, was aboard HMS Abdur, a mine-laying cruiser. It hit a mine and almost within minutes sunk, stood up on its end and went down.
Did you see that?
Pardon?
Did you see it?
Yeah, it was terrible. We nearly got to the shore in our landing craft because we expected opposition, but there was none. There wasn't any. The Germans had gone. But when HMS Abdur hit the mine, it more or less stood up on its nose and it was gone. And that had a battalion of paras on it, 6th Welsh Battalion. I think. Something like 150 men lost their lives, which is quite a lot, considering they were so near the land, really. Sailors and soldiers. As I say, no opposition at Taranto, as far as I know, just no opposition. It was deserted. We landed, marched through the town, and again stopped at Olive Groves, where we stayed for perhaps a week. Taranto was put out of bounds to us, the little story of the war there that Fred Martin said to me, if we don't go into Taranto, Dave, we're never going to see it. Let's hop the wag this afternoon. Well, it was out of bounds to us, we knew that, but yeah, fine, Fred, right. Fred, we get into Taranto and it was fairly deserted, but people were starting to trickle back. We came to a building which I thought was a pub. It turned out that it was a brothel, actually. Fred was starting to complain he didn't feel well. I feel a bit dicky. I said, well, I'm going to have a look, see what's going on in there, you know. Well, I found out what it was, and I come out. There's Fred spark out on the pavement with our company commander leaning over him. Turns around, looked at me, he said, oh, you as well, is it? So, well, get him in the Jeep, he said. Get him into the Jeep. I'll deal with you later. We were both now corporals. For all Fred, I don't know what it was, sunstroke or something, you know, he wasn't feeling too well. When we got back, Crawley, who was a bloody good officer, Major Crawley, said, I suppose you two think that because you were in the field, I can't do anything to you. Well, you've got another thing coming, he said. Both of you report to Father Egan, 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. Right, sir. So, what we had to do was go out in an Italian boat, rowing boat, with Father Egan, looking for bodies off the Abda. Oh, what a dreadful job. We had to get a line onto them and tow them back to a jetty. We didn't have to really, try to identify them, but my God, not a nice job at all.
Because of the state they were in?
But oh yeah, so some of, I think they'd run up against rocks, but some of them were, there was flesh missing, but they were all bloated, and we found, even Father Egan, who was our padre, another good bloke, a Jesuit he was, who was really the Catholic priest, but he looked after all of us, you know, and even he had a bottle of whiskey with him to have a swig. And I said to Fred, got me into a scrape there. But that was Crawley's way of discipline. He didn't go much for a ball, but it was practical. He needed two men to go out with, so he said, right, I'll sort you two out. Well, Italy was a relatively quiet period for us, really. The division, we were now, the division was all there. The 1st and 2nd Parachute Brigades and the Air Landing Brigade. We did get into action, but not anything too serious. We, despite the fact that we did lose our divisional commander, he was killed by a sniper somewhere near Brindisi. But what we were doing was going up the Adriatic side, Brindisi, Bari, Barletta, and other smaller places. It seemed to me that you expected to come into actions, but the Germans at the last minute decided to withdraw, and you'd enter a town just as they'd left, sort of thing. The Germans had made their mind up. They weren't going to stand in Italy until much higher up the Italy. So therefore, we didn't we didn't have a terrible. We did have casualties, but not anything terrible. From Barletta, I think we did do an exercise overnight in flat bottom landing craft, which I'm fairly certain must have been either Salerno or Anzio. All that happened was that we were taken out, was at sea overnight, landed in next morning on a fairly steep, rocky beach, an Italian village. After an hour ashore, we got back on the landing craft and went back to Barletta again. And, well, it wasn't that long after, we've never involved with Anzio or Salerno, but it wasn't long after that we were returned to England, along with other troops, along with the Desert Rat Division, that's the armoured, forget their number now. Seventh Armoured Division came home with us. We left the second Parachute Brigade, that's the 4th, 5th and 6th Battalions, there to carry on with the operations in Italy. I think afterwards they landed in the second brigade landed in southern France a bit later in the south of what is Vichy France and sort of freed that area. But we came home with the Air Landing Brigade and us, the 7th Armoured and other units to prepare for Second Front. We landed at Liverpool just before Christmas of 43. Went to the Grantham area and we were, by companies, we were, B Company were at Colsterworth, Headquarter Company Stoke Rochford, A Company at Eastern Hall, and C Company were Harlaxton Hall, where, well, life was very well received by the people of Lincolnshire. They really did take to us. They really were good. And life was quite pleasant, really. We reinforced. We trained. We thought we were going to be used on the on D-Day, but of course we weren't. But we were detailed off three or four operations. We were going to